Blog Talk Radio.
In much less detail, the podcast for the second straight night in a row. We are live. This is a Thursday night, September the 18th, 2014. I'm Dre. He's Jay. My co-host Jay, who will be joining us momentarily. Oh, there he is right there. It is time for NFL Week 3 picks. We're doing it early this time. This is on me. I'm going out of town early tomorrow morning, and I will not be available all weekend, so we are getting these picks out of the way right now, even though there's so many different injuries around the league and so many guys that might play, might not play, questionable, doubtful, who knows. But we're going to make these picks anyway to the best of our abilities, which is a lot better for Jason's abilities so far this year than me. But the one thing I was looking at, Jason, looking at the schedule this week, that's very interesting. I haven't gone back to look it up and research it, but this is the first time I can recall in quite a while that we've made it to week three, and there just happens to be no matchups on the schedule of two 2-0 teams going against each other. I guess NFL parity really is running amok.
I mean, there's definitely 2-0. Oh, excuse me, a little hoarse tonight. That 5.5 that 5.5 hour show last night must have really did me in. Now still a little bit under the weather, so I do apologize if I break up on the voice tonight a little bit. I'm not so sure it's parity because there's still 2-0 teams out there. It's just I think it's more of a schedule quirk than anything else. I think one thing is for sure is that we are going to be starting our week 1-0.
Oh, really?
Because we both picked the Falcons, and the Falcons are right now going into halftime 35-0.
Oh.
A Ray Rice style beatdown.
They may
not allow children in Tampa to watch this game tonight. Because I thought that elevator footage was graphic. What Atlanta is doing to Tampa tonight is pretty ugly. It's definitely domestic violence.
Well, it's indoors, that's for sure.
Yes, I would like to thank Jonathan Dwyer for the tweet of the century when he sent a response to a journalist talking about how he does not condone of domestic violence.
Domestic violence.
Yeah, it sounds like an autocorrect issue, but, you know, dude, we've had autocorrect around long enough now. You got to know better. You got to know.
So in honor of that, you have renamed your fantasy team?
Absolutely. That is gold right there.
You couldn't even wait around to next year to bring out the domestic violence.
No, it had to happen right now, mid-season. I don't care. It doesn't get any better than that.
That's just too good. 646-595-4534 is our phone number if you want to get in and show off your skills of some of these picks that I've been making. I don't know. If you think you can do better than me, and pretty much anyone can, you can give us a ring. We have an hour's show again. We're here until 10 o'clock Central Time, until 11 o'clock Eastern. You can always email the show with thoughts and comments and questions, and you will send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can tweet us. I'm at IMLDDre. Jason's at IMLDJTG. And our picks are going to be up on the blog after the show is over. And for that, you will go to inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. All our picks are always up on the blog there. And if you're subscribed to the show on iTunes already, thanks for coming in and listening to us on the archive. If you want to listen to us live, you can always go to our show page, blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail, which for some reason is showing our show last night as lasting, what was it, 5 hours and 38 minutes?
Yeah, when I saw that today, I was just like, oh man, someone forgot to end the show on the show page. But when you actually go in to listen to the show, it doesn't say that. It says it's a, I believe it was an hour regular show, and then we had about 25 minutes before my voice gave out, before the coughing got to be too much. And it looks right.
Yeah, so don't be afraid if you see that for some reason on our show. We have not done a five-hour show yet. We have not broken out the MLD telethon to try to raise funds. We're not at that stage quite yet.
That's right. We don't have Jerry's kids.
That's right.
It's about the kids. Do it for the kids.
We got Jay's kids. You got the little one running around, the 2.5-year-old, and then the little baby.
Yeah. Well, we could do a telethon for Adrian Peterson's kids.
Yeah, how will we find them all? They're all scattered around. There's so many of them. We don't know who's where. He's almost trying to get into Antonio Cromartie territory, it seems.
I guess you could say we'd have to switch back and forth.
Thank you. We'd be here all the week. Our first of four highlight games for week three, we are picking the Chargers and the Bills to take a deeper look at, because here's two teams that if you said one of them is starting off 2-0 and the other is 1-1, it would have to be unanimous that the Chargers would be the 2-0 team and the Bills would be the 1-1 team. But no. E.J. Manuel has led the Buffalo Bills to a 2-0 record and a home date with the Chargers. The West Coast team flying east for a noon game. Buffalo could be looking at a 3-0 start to the season, and how crazy would that be? What do the bettors think of this possibility? They're giving them a puncher's chance, I suppose. The Bills are a 2.5-point home favorite. Buffalo gives 2.5, hosting San Diego. Jason, what's your pick?
Yeah, I'll go with that. I'll give those 2.5 points and take Buffalo to come out of this. The Buffalo Bills, 3-0.
Wow.
Not as uncommon as you might think. The Bills have gotten off to some fast starts this year over the last 5-6 years, and then they just kind of fizzle. It's not the same team. It's not the same makeup. It's obviously all different guys. But, you know, history does say that the Bills like to get off to fast starts and then just completely collapse. But this is a perfect setup for them. You got San Diego feeling like they're hot shit now because they knocked off the champs. So what do they get to do? They get to hop on a plane and go across country, and you get to take the West Coast team and fly them to the East Coast, which almost never works out well. Worked out for Arizona last week, but we underestimated the shittiness of the New York Giants. The Bills are a much better team than the Giants. The Bills play defense. They're not self-destructing on offense. And I really like the Bills to get it done here. They're doing enough. I don't like that the Chargers are without Ryan Matthews. So if any chance of that they had to get it done on the run, I'm not going to trust with Donald Brown, I believe. Did I hear Donald Brown's name come up?
Sure did.
Or Danny Woodhead. It's like, no, they're not gonna go in there with those guys, and I don't think Philip Rivers is gonna go as insane with those perfectly placed balls like he did against Seattle. I think they got so up for the Seahawks they can't go anywhere but down this week. So I'm gonna take the Bills.
Well, that's an interesting viewpoint, but I'm going to have to take the other side on that. The Chargers are showing me something early this year. So, I mean, Buffalo is too. I'm keeping a close eye on E.J. Manuel. I'm wondering if he's turned a corner from just terrible quarterback to, you know, competent game manager. You know, through two games so far, so good. You know, I'll wait to see a little more. And he's got a pretty bad defense to go against this week with San Diego. So he could easily turn in another good performance. But it's so tenuous with the Bills. Missing any weapons on offense could throw everything out of whack. And as insignificant as one might think Robert Woods is, the wide receiver, did miss practice today with an ankle injury. So never a good sign when you're missing a practice on Thursday. That's usually a decent indicator that somebody's not going to be able to make it to the game. But sometimes they do. But, you know, there's only so many one-handed awesome catches that Sammy Watkins can make. There's only so many times that C.J. Spiller can run back a kickoff or a touchdown. You know, I just think Buffalo is not nearly as good as they've shown that they are so far. And I don't want to give San Diego too much credit and anoint them as a super team. But damn it, anybody that beats the Seattle Seahawks, as awesome as they've been on defense basically ever since Pete Carroll got there, that's a hell of an accomplishment, and I have to give San Diego their props, and I have to pick them to win this game in Buffalo. I cannot ignore that awesome performance that Phillip Rivers had. Basically, you know, Antonio Gates was the red zone target. He was the man to get it in the end zone, but there's so many other guys there that can still make plays for San Diego, you know, when they have opportunities. Everyone thought that Ladarius Green was going to be the man at tight end for San Diego. So this might be his week to get off for 3 touchdowns. Maybe he's just waiting to take over. You mentioned the running back situation with San Diego, where Ryan Matthews, the starter that San Diego seems to always want to sort of, you know, sit down and reserve and rest and you know, not run him into the ground because he seems to be a little injury prone. Well, here he is. He's injured again. And he will not be playing at all in this one. So you sort of derided Donald Brown and his abilities. But I actually like Donald Brown. I liked him coming out of UConn, going to the Indianapolis Colts. And I think he's going to take advantage of this opportunity. I can imagine Buffalo trying to spread out and stop Phillip Rivers from doing to them what he did to the Seahawks. And I see some holes for Donald Brown. I think he's going to have a pretty good day running the football. And one factor that I'm looking at, Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator for the Chargers, getting his first shot at that, and there's a nice big pelt on your wall there to knock off the world champion Seahawks. Well, now he gets to go back into Buffalo. I just think he's going to have some tricks up his sleeve. I think the Chargers are going to put 45 on the Buffalo Bills. I think the K-gun is going to be in full effect on the other side of the field, not for the Bills, but for the Bolts. And I think the Chargers are going to follow up their big victory over Seattle with pretty much an ass-whooping of the Buffalo Bills.
So I'm taking that you like the over on this game. Because just so you know, it's 45.5 is the over-under. So if you've got, unless this is 45-0, you're taking the over then.
I'm predicting one team this week to get shut out.
Oh.
It's not Buffalo. It's not Buffalo.
Okay, because that would be bold if you... No, I'm saying, I mean, we don't do over-unders on this show. Every once in a while, it does come up. But, you know, it's an over-under of 45.5. That would be ballsy to say 45-0. Take the under.
Take the
That's
under.
Guts.
Yeah. That's bold. No, not quite that bold. I got one team that has proven that they deserve to be predicted to have a shutout pitched on them. But the Bills would not be that team. They've proven themselves to be pretty decent on offense so far this year, but I don't think they're going to be much match for the Chargers, frankly. Looking at our second highlight game, we tend to ignore the NFC East because it's not nearly as good as everyone thinks it is, but this matchup is very compelling. We knew it was going to be compelling when it was made in the offseason because of the big star DeSean Jackson, the former Eagle star, going to the Redskins under very shady circumstances. And now he gets to return to Philadelphia and possibly get to show Philly what they're missing, or Philly will get to punch him in the fucking mouth and show him that they never liked him and don't want him on the team and are glad that he's gone. We'll see how it turns out. Now there's added drama because of the whole quarterback situation for the Redskins. Robert Griffin III, he's out. Kirk Cousins, once again, gets the starting nod, as he's done a few times over the last couple of years. And we discussed that a little bit on the last show, that he's going to get a chance to maybe prove the Shanahan's right, that he's You know, he should have been the guy to be drafted right behind RG3 in the same draft all along. Maybe the Shanahans knew something. We'll wait and see on that one. But the Washington Redskins going into Philadelphia, that crazy Chip Kelly, offense for the Eagles. Public likes the Eagles. Washington has to take 6.5 going into Philly. And that's a little too much for me. I like Philly to win the game, but I like Washington to cover the number. It's hard to go against Kirk Cousins with the quarterback skills that he has shown so far in his brief career. Not saying he's the next big star. Not saying he's Tom Brady taking over for an injured veteran quarterback. In this case, wouldn't even be a veteran. The guy's got the same amount of experience as he does in the NFL. But I don't think this is quite that situation where Cousins just gets in there and takes off and never loses the starting job again and goes to multiple Pro Bowls. But, damn it, hasn't he shown a tendency to play good football? Isn't he pretty much a sort of a cookie-cutter quarterback in that respect, that, you know, the good throws that you want him to make, he makes them. He's not, you know, dropping 80-yard bombs to anybody. He's not Brett Favre. But whatever he's been asked to do, thus far, he's done it. So I do like Philly to get a win. I just feel like their offense is just revving to the point where you're not going to hold them, you know, under 30 points too many times this year. It looks like they're going to just, you know, take off every chance they get. They're going to get that offense revved up and, you know, just put the pedal to the metal. But I think Washington can stay with them. I think they can hang in there in the mid to upper 20s and cover a 6.5-point spread. That seems a little too much for me. Another big issue that made me pick that is I think Washington will be able to hang in there not just through the air with Kirk Cousins, but also in the running game with Alfred Morris. And a big key to that is, and I can't tell if Michael Kendricks for Philadelphia, the linebacker that seems to be their best tackler, him and D'Amico Ryans, I can't tell if Kendricks is going to be able to make it to the game. He's got that calf injury that he suffered in the game Monday night against the Colts that carted him off the field. They didn't get the cart, but he hobbled off the field. But he wasn't able to return to that game. Looking at the injury reports, you know, he's still hobbling around. He's questionable. He looks like he's going to be a game-time decision. I take that into consideration when I look at this matchup. Something else you have to look at on the other side in Philly's favor possibly is DeSean Jackson banged up his shoulder in his game Sunday, and he's very iffy. Now, he obviously wants to be out there as bad as anybody has ever wanted to play a game, but that doesn't mean he's going to be able to make it. That's another game-time decision, definitely something to keep your eye on. And no Jordan Reed still, the stud tight end for the Skins, is going to miss another game, and that hurts as well. But all in all, I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be up-tempo. I like the over in this one, too. Whatever the over-under is, I would think that this is going to go over. But I just like Washington to cover that number. I think it's a little big.
Yeah, given our record last week and games that we agreed on, I'm kind of worried here because I agree with you on this. I do like Washington.
Oh, no.
I like those points. I don't think with Kirk Cousins it's about him being like the Messiah for the Redskins. You know, he's not going to be the second coming of, I don't know, anybody that played quarterback. He's not going to be like Mark Rippon or Doug Williams or Joe Theismann. He's not taking these guys to a Super Bowl. But and it's sort of, we talked about this on the show as well, with sort of this leak to the media with Jake Gruden about how he fits the system better than RG3. Mm-hmm. And yeah, sure enough, RG3 crumples to the turf and just nobody touched him. There he is, crumpled up in a ball on the turf. They cart him off and all of a sudden the Redskins look like a completely different team. They could run the ball. They could throw from the pocket. I think it gives them confidence on offense, and I don't think they've had the confidence in RG3 on offense since his injury, especially coming back last year. And that it makes a difference, you know, especially to the guys around you. They got to believe that you can do the job. And I'm not sure he had the trust of his teammates to do the job. And, yeah, I mean, Philadelphia, that was a nice comeback win on Monday night. You kind of wonder if they expended a little extra energy in that comeback. And there's another team that's going to be feeling all high and mighty after something like that happens. But they get to come into a tough divisional matchup. And these divisional games, especially with the heated opponents, they're always a little tighter. You know, we talked about this, New Orleans and Atlanta. These games always seem to come down to field goals. And that's really what it ends up being. So I do like, I'm with you, Philadelphia, to win. I hate to say, 6.5, we're not really getting cute. We haven't had many instances of getting cute yet. But 6.5's not really getting cute. So I do like the Eagles to win. But I do like the Redskins to get this cover. I wouldn't be shocked if Washington won, but given I'd be more likely to say Washington would win if this game was at Washington. I don't see them going into Philly and winning, but I see them maybe giving them a couple of early punches. Philly kind of has to gut this one out late.
Well, they better get some early punches in. They will get blown out if they don't get their early licks on the Eagles, because we know, we've seen the first two games that Philly has played. Whether you get an early lead or not, your defense is dragging. Their tongues are dragging on the ground. By the time the second half comes and the Eagles really take advantage at that point and turn on the afterburners and with Darren Sproles and all those athletes, and they'll really get after you in the second half. So you better punch them when you get a chance and get an early lead and try to hold on. Just grab as hard as you can and hold on and try to ride out the storm.
Yeah, and just to give you a live update here, since we are doing this live during Thursday Night Football, there's been a Mike Glennon sighting in this game. That's how bad it's gotten.
No.
And also, if you're reading the papers in the morning, Bobby Rainey is a fumble machine. He's Tampa Bay's David Wilson.
Ooh.
I think he may have 3 or 4 touches and 2 fumbles.
Oh, that's not good.
So not looking good there for the Buccos. Just nice that we're getting a win here tonight.
But what happened to John McClown? I thought that was Lovey's guy. What happened?
Maybe they're saving him.
Oh, they're saving all that great play that he's got in him for later?
I wouldn't be shocked to see this come back from commercial and Matt Ryan not be out on the field anymore.
Yeah, if they're up 5 touchdowns or whatever the score is, yeah, he's probably getting an early night off.
Yes, and they're also up 5 touchdowns against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Are you saying the Bucs aren't going to put together an offensive rally?
People, and you know this. Excuse me. Wow, I just hit puberty. This. There's people out there, not us, who thought Tampa Bay was going to be some hot shit this year.
They were a lot of people's playoff pick, like surprise. You know, come from the bottom playoff team, because Lovie Smith was going to really instill some veteran, earthiness. I don't remember all the words they were trying to describe him with, but that he was going to bring this sense of calm to the organization after Greg Schiano brought this sense of panic and MRSA and everything else that he brought with him. That Lovie was just the elixir that they needed to get rid of the toxins from Greg Schiano, that he was going to come in and just make everything all better.
Oh, it's earthy, all right. Like manure.
Oh, God. I hit the yeah button and it didn't go. I think you've used
it. No, it's okay. I didn't. Just hit the whistle. We do another pick here.
Moving on to the Niners and the Cardinals, here's another team that everyone had as a playoff team, as a surprise team from coming from last year and not making the playoffs. Although it wouldn't have been much of a surprise, because Arizona was 10-6 last year, but This is another team that was a lot of people's favorites to make the playoffs out of the teams that didn't make it last year. Taking on, of course, the three-time NFC Conference game San Francisco 49ers and all the success that they've had over the last few years. But, of course, I didn't have either one of them making the playoffs because of all the injuries that both teams suffered on defense before the year even began. So now they get to hook up San Francisco out in the desert at Arizona. People still love the Niners. Despite them being 1-1, San Francisco gives 3 points at the 2-0 Cardinals. Jason, what's your pick?
Yeah, well, call me crazy. Very doubtful. Carson Palmer even gets anywhere near the field this week, which means I believe it'll be Drew Stanton again. Is that if I'm remembering that correct?
That's correct.
It's good enough for me. I'm not a fan of the 49ers right now, not at all. They haven't impressed me. I think Arizona is still playing enough defense. I know you were talking about all the missing pieces with Arizona. I think that they've, for whatever reason, maybe it's coaching. Maybe they just coached them up, but they've cobbled some pieces together out there in the desert, and that team's playing really well. They went to New York. Nobody would have thought that they would have, done that. You and I certainly didn't, with a backup quarterback. And that we made that pick thinking that Carson Palmer was going out there for the Giants. And then, like you talked about on the recap show, this just became a lock when Drew Stanton was the starter. I think they're going to have something for San Francisco, who they just have not impressed me. And maybe Arizona getting off to that 2-0 start kind of gives them sort of that extra week to think that maybe they can rest their quarterback another week and not press them into action, because for whatever reason, they're sitting atop that division right now. And you got to start thinking long term. If you're the Arizona Cardinals, you don't want to be 10-6 and not make the playoffs again. So you got to be ready for the stretch run. So I'm going to go with Arizona here, even without their quarterback. That's how little faith I have in the 49ers right now. It's a mess. I just don't really like that team at all.
Yeah, you cannot send Carson Palmer out there against the 49ers defense, even with no Alden Smith and no Navarro Bowman and a couple of other guys missing. You can't send him out there if he's still got nerve issues in his arm and he's not able to make the throws, that he needs to make, because that's just asking for it. So whatever we think of Drew Stanton, he's a human being. He's a full human being. And right now Carson Palmer does not appear to be a full human being. And you can't do that. You have to go with Stanton once again. And you have to hope that the Niners defense takes him lightly and lets him do whatever he wants, just like the Giants did. And I'm going to agree with you again. And I'm going to pick Drew Stanton to beat the San Francisco 49ers. And you talk about a sentence I thought I would never say. But there it is. It feels like a 16-12 game. I love the under in this one if we're keeping track of over-unders, because I don't think either one of these teams are going to put up too many points. But, yeah, we talked about how unimpressive the 49ers looked in a game against the Bears last week, in which they had all the momentum. They had all the good vibrations from their game at Dallas the week before. Chicago had all their injuries coming in, and you would think the 49ers were just going to hammer the Bears. Now, we, picked the Bears to win that game, but not too many other people did that. But, yeah, it's a bad look. When you have all those factors in your favor, as San Francisco did Sunday night, and still find a way to lose that game, culprit number one has to be Colin Kaepernick, showing off his lack of touch and his quarterback skills, which do not seem to have really developed much over the last couple of years. When I think back to that playoff game against the Green Bay Packers, where he looked like the greatest athlete in the history of the NFL, and it just hasn't progressed since then. It seems like he's kind of hit a wall where he just can't get over the hump. I think he's a little bit like RG3. I think he wants to take off and run a lot more than he should. And when he can't, he gets a little flustered. And, you know, in RG3's case, he seems to have fallen in love with the check down before he got hurt and the 3-yard pass. And in Kaepernick's case, what he's done is he's decided, I'm going to just zing this thing wherever I can find a hole, and I'm going to fit it in there no matter how tight it is, no matter how many defenders are in between my receiver and the ball. I'm still going to throw it as hard as I can and get it there because I'm Colin Kaepernick and I can do that. And he's found out, no, you can't. In Arizona, that defense, despite the missing parts, I think it's time to look at the coordinators and give them some props. So Arizona's guy is Todd Bowles, former California head coach, former college coach for California Berkeley. Give him the credit. He's put these guys in a position to succeed and overcome the guys that are not there. And for San Francisco, I look at Vic Fangio, their D coordinator, and I look at what he was doing out there against the Bears. And I think if you paid attention to the play calling, it seemed to be some arrogance there. It seemed to be arrogance of the highest order, as far as I'm concerned, because it's common knowledge that the Bears are undisciplined on defense. I'm looking at the San Francisco defense, and I'm talking about the San Francisco offense that I actually wanted to criticize, because it's their play calling actually that struck me as arrogant. Greg Roman was kept calling these same offensive plays against the Bears defense. All these misdirections, all these play actions, all these option reads. It's common knowledge that the Bears defense is undisciplined, and you can fake them out. You can do a lot of different runs one way and then counter the other and snap off a bunch of big plays. And they were doing it in the first half. But it seemed like they were calling these plays with no regard for anything else, over and over and over and over again. And eventually even the Bears can figure it out and say, okay, wait a minute, what's happening? We got to stop this. So once they figured it out and started actually being there on the other side when San Fran was faking to one side and going the other way, eventually the Bears were actually there. Then the Bears, you know, through all the different things that happened in that game, took the lead. And now you can't run all these fakes and counters. Now you actually have to throw with Colin Kaepernick to mount a comeback. And it didn't work out because he has no touch. And so I think the same thing might happen here, that, you know, San Fran's offense might be a little too uncomplicated. They might try one thing and try to hammer it too much and wind up having to resort to Colin Kaepernick using his arm to get him back into a game. And I don't think he's ready to do that yet. I just don't think he's at that stage yet. So I'm going to agree with you, and you know, I don't feel great about it, but I think Arizona's going to eke out a victory over the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, with Kaepernick, you know, you talked about that playoff game he had against the Packers. That was all running. He just ran and ran and ran. And what's really changed in his game is what he's looking to do now is run, but then throw this, you know, laser beam pass down the field. Instead of, sometimes I think he'd be better off running. And I'm not seeing the running part of his game anymore, and neither is anybody else, and I think they've made the adjustment to him.
Yeah, they're trying to force him to be more of a pocket quarterback, and it's not working so far. And San Fran's defense does deserve criticism as well, because to let those receivers Sunday night, Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey, you know they can't get past your DBs. They're obviously hobbling. They're obviously not going to run any go routes. How you let them still go up and make plays on you is beyond me, and I think that's definitely on Vic Fangio. So I got some hate for all the coordinators in San Francisco and the coach Jim Harbaugh as well. And now our main event of Sunday, it is the Super Bowl rematch that everyone was targeting on the schedule when it first came up. It's the Denver Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks. Will Peyton Manning exact his revenge on Seattle for one of his worst games as a pro? Or will Seattle once again smack down the Broncos and show why they deserved indeed to be the world champions? The public likes Seattle. You will not see Peyton Manning as a 5-point underdog very much, but in this game, Denver at 2-0 is getting 5 points going into Seattle, who's 1-1. It's not enough. Yes, I have to go against Peyton Manning in this respect, because even with what San Diego did to Seattle last week, even with the quote-unquote exposing of Richard Sherman, I still have to trust that Seattle is going to get it together. That was one bad game. The Seattle defense rarely has a game like that. And I just got to trust that they're going to get it together and have a much better game this time around. They're at home. That's a very big key to this situation. I think if Peyton Manning had a Super Bowl revenge game at Denver against whoever beat him in a Super Bowl, I probably would take Peyton Manning to get his revenge and get the victory. But in this case, they weren't even in CenturyLink Field when Denver just crapped the bed and had the worst possible game you could imagine in the Super Bowl last year. They were in a neutral site for that. This is actually in the greatest home field advantage in the NFL. And as much as I love Peyton Manning, I don't think it's going to go well for him. I think Seattle's going to beat him by a couple of touchdowns. I think they're a little salty as well coming off of their loss to San Diego. Maybe they were doing a little overlooking. And I think they're going to be ready to smack Peyton Manning around. Wes Welker may go in this game. He may be back from his suspension and his concussions and everything that's been wrong with him. I don't think it's going to matter much. I just wanted to mention it just to get it on the record. But I do love Seattle in this game to beat up Denver and to prove why they won the Super Bowl, unfortunately for me, because I had picked Denver to win that game and I looked as bad as – that's one of my worst picks ever, honestly. But I'm going to go the other way this time. I'm going to take the Seattle Seahawks to come back and prove themselves once again over the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, if this game was in Seattle, maybe I'd give Denver a shot. But I don't think Denver has any chance in this game. All the ingredients are there for Seattle to come back home after a loss, hosting the team that gave them their first ever Super Bowl. They're just going to rip them. I think it's going to be ugly. I think they're going to be after Peyton Manning all day long. Peyton Manning can throw the ball with the touch, you know, and he's got talented players out there. But I just have a feeling that in that stadium, with those fans, with the noise, they are going to be so jacked up and ready to go that it's going to be over before it began. I think it would take a monumental effort for Denver, and if Denver goes in there and wins, hey, I'll give them all the credit in the world. I just don't see it happening. I'm with you. I hate to say a squish, but this isn't the shutout, is it?
No, it is not.
Okay. But I don't think Denver's getting a lot of points on the board here, you know. This maybe 10, 13. They're not getting many. So I'm with you.
Yeah, that's about what I got, 13. And the running factor as well. Beast mode didn't really have a chance to go to beast mode in the Super Bowl. He had his moments, but the game was over so quick that they were able to kind of store him away. They didn't need him to, you know, carry it 25 or 30 times. I think he's going to get his 25 or 30 carries. I think he's going to beat the Broncos up inside and finish that game off late. It doesn't look good for Denver. They haven't been very impressive looking these first couple of games this year either. So there's another another little factor is that Denver seems to be having a bit of a Super Bowl hangover, and then to see the tormentors up front right in their face, the guys that put them in this tailspin. I still like Denver to succeed and win the Super Bowl at the end of the year, but I think they're going to have to suffer a little bit of pain early on in this year and get over that hump, and this is part of that pain. Now we move on to the rest of week 3 of the NFL 2014 in even more less detail. Let's start with those Dallas Cowboys, those schizophrenic Cowboys who looked so bad in week 1 and so good last week. And they are on the road at the St. Louis Rams, who are also 1-1, but public doesn't think they're that good. You would think 2 1-1 teams would be a regular old 3-point spread, but St. Louis is only giving 1 point at home against the Cowboys.
You know, I was willing to, if we had made this pick yesterday, I'd have been like, ooh, man, I'm not so sure about taking Dallas because, you know, St. Louis, the backup quarterback, they went and they eked out that win against Tampa. Watching Tampa tonight, Dallas squish.
I concur. And it's so crazy to look at how bad Tony Romo looked in that opener and say, ooh, we might not pick Dallas again. They might have to get rid of Romo. His career might be over. And in 1 week, get to go to Tennessee and light them up. And all of a sudden, all right, yeah, we're back on Dallas. They're not so bad. I'm with you. I'm taking the Cowboys as well to beat down the Rams. Seattle's got no punch on offense right now. Dallas is the perfect defense for St. Louis to get well against if they had any punch, but they don't have any punch right now. You know, Zach Stacy and Benny Cunningham, you would think they'd run for hundreds of yards on the Cowboys, but you should play all the way up against St. Louis right now because they've got no aerial attack. And Tavon Austin probably isn't playing. Oh, good God. Yeah, that should be that's not my shutout either, by the way, but it wouldn't surprise me necessarily.
Well, Dallas is going to shut anybody out.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't think. Houston's new star tight end, J.J. Watt, and the Texans go into Giants Stadium to take on Eli Manning and the Giants, and Houston is a 2-point favorite going into New York to take on, oh boy, Eli Manning. How bad has he looked?
Well, I'm officially done with the Giants until they show me something, so I will take Houston to go in there, and I don't think it's even going to be that difficult. The Giants have shown me so little in those first two games and most of last season that I am not I'm not picking them for a while. So I'm taking Houston here.
And on defense, they've lost tackle machine professional tackler John Beeson to injury. He will not play in this game. Walter Thurman, their nickel cornerback that I thought was such a great pickup in the offseason, he won't play in this game. Jarrell Jernigan, they don't have much punch in their wide receiver core right now, but he was their third receiver, I believe. He's out for the year. They're done. This is my lock of the week. This is my shutout game. I have Houston winning 20-0. I know I had the Giants all the way last week. I was all in on the Giants. And that's the effort that they showed against Drew Stanton and the Arizona Cardinals. And that's the Giants? My fucking ass. I'm with you. I'm through with the Giants until they show me any reason at all to pick them. And you know what that means. They're going to win this week.
They're going to win.
Yep. The Minnesota Vikings all got their whooping sticks from the Patriots last week, and now they have to go into New Orleans in the Saints' home opener. And as you would figure, it's one of the bigger lines of the week. Minnesota gets 10 points at the Saints.
Yeah, too much distraction, too much lack of talent. Not and first of all, it's in New Orleans. Now this is going to be a major blowout. I'm going to take the Saints squish.
We have agreed on every single game so far, except for San Diego Buffalo. I thought we had agreed on every single one of them, but no, we differed on that one. But I'm with you on this one. I'm with you on this one, too. New Orleans is 0-2. They've got to be very pissed. They're coming home. Their home opener. They're arguably the second-best home team in the NFL. And they get a Minnesota team that just does not seem to be ready to compete. I mean, we all loved Mike Zimmer after that first game of the season against St. Louis. And then they came back last week and just laid a turd in the middle of the field. Yeah, I'm going to have to take New Orleans to cover that 10.
And just to give you another little update here, just so you know, the over-under on tonight's Thursday night game between the Falcons and the Buccaneers was 47. That was the over-under. The Falcons have it by themselves.
They're over 47 by themselves?
It is now 49-0.
Whoa.
Atlanta.
That's like a college beatdown. That's, oh my God. How the fuck was that spread 6? Do you have any explanation for that?
Thank you. That's all I can say. Thank you.
That seemed like a gift when we got it, and then sure enough, it oh my God, 49-0. Wow. Moving on to the Titans and the Bengals. We've talked about how impressive Cincinnati has been so far this year. Tennessee, their usual up and down self. You kind of never know whatever you're going to get from them. The Titans are +6.5 at Cincinnati.
Yeah, this is probably one of the picks that I really struggled with the most. Because in my brain, I could make the case for Tennessee to cover this number but lose. But I think in the end, it's going to be too much Cincinnati. I just don't trust the Titans. I think that's the trick. I mean, yeah, they went to Kansas City and they got that nice road win, and then they went right back to being the Tennessee Titans last week. Cincinnati, I think Cincinnati's on a mission this year. They got a lot to prove. So I don't really see them taking opponents lightly right now. They didn't take Atlanta lightly last week, and I don't think they'll take Tennessee lightly this week. So I'm going to take Cincinnati here to give the numbers.
Boy, I completely agree with you that I could have seen a case for Tennessee to cover that number, but ultimately I'm going to go with Cincinnati. The deciding factor to me was the combination of A.J. Green, after all the talk of Liz Frank and maybe season-ending foot injury, he's actually practicing, and he looks like he's back in. He looks like he's going to be out there on Sunday, although he may not be anywhere near 100%. The combination of that, along with Tennessee's best cover cornerback, Jason McCourty, has a groin injury. I think that's got – you have to go with Cincinnati when you combine those two factors. You know that Cincinnati's going to run on Tennessee. You know that they're committed more to the run this year. But then you factor in that A.J. Green might actually be out there, one of the best five receivers in football, and Tennessee might have an issue covering him, being a little short in the secondary. That's a couple of coincidences too many for me, so I will take the Bengals as well. The Baltimore Ravens are on the road at those Cleveland Browns, trying to figure out the Brown fever. No, you know, we talked about the lack of 2-0 teams matching up against each other. There's only 7 2-0 teams, if I count it correctly, this week. So, you know, it would have taken some maneuvering to get them to match up. I just think there's so much parity in the league. I'm going to stop really quick right now to count up the number of 1-1 teams I see, because this is a matchup of 1-1 teams, and there's several matchups of 1-1 teams. There's a lot of 1-1 teams. If you count Atlanta, who's about to go to 2-1, obviously, counting them, there would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. There's 18 teams that's 1-1 right now. That's crazy. I don't think that's ever – that's got to be a record for week 3. That's unbelievable. So anyway, back to trying to figure out Baltimore and then trying to figure out Cleveland. The public likes Baltimore a lot more, obviously. Baltimore on the road gives 2 points at the Browns.
Yeah, I've got the Brown fever. I think other than that first half against Cincinnati, Cleveland's played pretty good ball. Yeah, Baltimore's rested after that Thursday night win. I think that's a little overrated. They needed that win. That was a very cleansing thing after all the Ray Rice stuff. But now they're just one of multiple teams who have abusers on their team. So they're just, you know, you're almost not cool now unless you have somebody on your team who's been deactivated for beating up a kid or beating up his girlfriend or something like that. So, you know, it's they're so over it now. No, I like Cleveland. I think that's, especially at home, They got a little bit of something to prove. They just got to love being the home dog every week now. and they showed me something against the Saints. So I'll take the brown fever.
You sound like you have the brown fever. I think that explains some of your voice maladies right now. I concur. I also have the brown fever. The big factor for me is that losing Ben Tate to injury already, he just seems to be an injury-prone running back that's never going to stay on the field very long. They've gotten Terrence West to step in as a very good replacement. He looks solid, so that's a big factor. And the other big factor is Brian Hoyer so far has done a great job of game managing. He's been excellent in that role. He hasn't tried to do too much. You got all those guys missing in the Cleveland pass-catching rotation. You got the tight end Jordan Cameron, who might actually come back this week, but he's still iffy with his shoulder injury. And, of course, Josh Gordon out there, still suspended, might come back now after 10 weeks of suspension because the NFL just seems to make up rules about who's suspended and who's not just whenever they want to. But, yeah, Hoyer's been quite impressive to me, so I will take Cleveland to get a victory at home along with you there.
Well, you know, if Cleveland can be anywhere near 500 when Josh Gordon comes back, that's going to be a huge boost for them.
Yeah, they'll have a shot. They will have a shot at the playoffs.
That's one of my playoff teams. It's one of my playoff teams.
Yeah, I'm definitely keeping an eye on them and the Jets. You really went out there against the against what the NFL has been doing lately by picking those two teams for the playoffs. Moving on to the Lions and the Packers. Up in Detroit, Green Bay, I'm still worried about them a little bit, just letting Geno Smith make a comeback on them and almost tie that game, if only for Marty Morningweg not calling a timeout. I still think that's quite worrisome. But Green Bay on the road at Detroit, Green Bay gets 2.5 points as the underdog at the Lions, another 1-1 matchup.
Yeah, this is one of those early season kind of matchups that I don't think is really going to come into play when you get towards the playoff push. I actually think this is going to be a huge Detroit win. I like Detroit really large in this game by a lot of points. I think this is going to be one of those quote-unquote good losses for Green Bay, because I think this is that opponent that's going to really highlight a lot of the things that they're going to need to coach up. I don't think these two teams match up very well. This is not a good team for Green Bay to have to play in Detroit. Give me the Lions. Squish.
I concur.
We're going to have a horrible week.
you give up all that yardage to Geno Smith and the Jets. The Lions should get 400 yards of offense, no sweat, on the Packers. Now I'm worried, of course, because the Packers still have Aaron Rodgers. But ultimately, that's a pretty small number for Detroit to cover. Detroit can put up 30 points and still only win by a field goal, and that would cover the spread. So yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be a squish necessarily, but I'm with you that Detroit's going to have a lot of fun on offense and put up some big numbers and wind up winning that game. Indianapolis and Jacksonville. The Jaguars contending for the worst team in football, pretty much them and the Giants seem to be Tampa Bay, I take that back. Those three teams are definitely in the mix for worst teams in football. And to prove that, the Indianapolis Colts, who are 0-2, are on the road, giving 7 points to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Well, you know, sometimes you talk about teams that come off of bad losses and they go out and they rip the other team. I think that loss to the Eagles on Monday night is going to kind of have a hangover effect here on the Colts. I say they need to come back to win this game late. I'm taking the Jags to cover.
We are definitely off the page on that one. We are not on the same page. I think the Colts are going to come back and rip the Jaguars because the Jaguars don't seem to have the basics to put together an NFL team right now on offense, defense, special teams, you name it. The Jaguars seem to be all sorts of terrible, and I think the Colts are going to rebound nicely and get a big 20-point victory in Jacksonville. The Oakland Raiders, I left out another team that's a contender for one of the worst teams in football. Their rookie quarterback, Derek Carr, goes on the road to Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, and predictably this is the biggest spread of the week. Oakland is plus 14 at New England.
It's not enough. That's all I got. It's not enough.
That's all he needs. I say it is enough. I say Oakland covers the spread because I don't think New England is playing nearly cohesive enough to cover a 14-point spread on anybody at this stage. They've still got a long ways to go. Now, are they going to get there by the end of the year? Of course, because they're the Patriots. They always seem to get there towards the end of the year. But right now, no chance. I don't think there's any way New England covers that number on the Oakland Raiders. Miami and Kansas City, the 0-2 Chiefs, I don't think they're a contender for the worst team in football, but they're not very good. They're definitely not playing good football right now. And the Miami Dolphins playing pretty good. They've looked pretty very impressive at times over the first couple of weeks of the season. Kansas City on the road at the Dolphins. KC gets three and a hook at the Dolphins.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the bad luck Chiefs. I mean, we talked about it in the AFC preview, how awful, how brutal the schedule is for those AFC West teams, and I think the Chiefs are going to, they're taking the brunt of it right now. They're playing some good teams. Tennessee doesn't really count as a good team, but that, you know, that kind of sets the tone for how good they are overall as a team. I don't like them at all this week, so I'll take Miami and the points.
Yep, I concur. I'll give it a 3.5 as well. Until Alex Smith displays some ability to overcome his shortcomings on offense, and I'm not just talking about his physical shortcomings. I'm talking about the guys on his team around him, their shortcomings, because that offense is just sputtering right now. Jamaal Charles is practicing. Again, it's too early in the week to know if he's going to actually make it back out there on the field for this game Sunday. Niall Davis seems to be a worthy replacement if Charles doesn't go, but they also got those defensive injuries. Safety Eric Berry, still questionable. Their best tackler, Derek Johnson, out for the year. No, I got to go with Miami. No Sean Moreno is no Sean Moreno. He's not going to play. He's got that dislocated elbow. But I think the Chiefs' defense is so bad and so beat up, even Lamar Miller can run further for a big day against the Chiefs. And you know how much I hate Lamar Miller. Sunday Night Football sees the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Carolina Panthers. Here we go again with Carolina. I can't pick them to save my life. I don't know what I'm doing. I picked against them twice. I'm 0-2. Let's see what happens this time. Pittsburgh plus 3 and a hook again at the Panthers.
Yeah, I've got no trust in Pittsburgh. I think you know I think Pittsburgh is one of the least impressive teams in football, other than playing one good half of football against Cleveland, which is also the only bad real half of football that Cleveland's played. I'm going to take Carolina here easily. You can have those points. If you want Pittsburgh, you can have them too.
No, I'm going to ruin the Panthers right now, and I'm going to go ahead and take Carolina with you. I'm going to give the 3 and a hook. Because Pittsburgh is so inconsistent right now, and because Carolina is so tough. It doesn't matter who's at quarterback, doesn't matter at home, on the road. They're just a very, very tough team to beat, and I got to give them their credit and their props eventually. So I'll do it this week, even though Greg Hardy will not be there because Carolina just now decided to have a conscience and bench him. I don't even know what to make of all that. Monday Night Football sees yet another battle of 1-1 teams and the old giveaway point spread. It's Chicago plus 3 at the Jets.
Wait a minute. Are the Bears a road dog in prime time?
Oh, no.
Again?
Two weeks in a row?
Don't I got to take it. The Bears.
Oh.
To
you
win.
Did it again. Oh. I really wanted to. That win over San Francisco is very impressive. I can't trust that Bears defense to put together two outings in a row where they actually make plays at the end of the game and get it done. I'm taking Geno Smith and the Jets to cover the 3-point spread and beat the Bears by a touchdown. He's been somewhat impressive lately. I wonder if he's turned a corner of some sorts. And Peanut Tillman's out now. That's one of my biggest reasons why I had the Bears against the 49ers is on one side is the rookie Kyle Fuller, and on the other side is the veteran Peanut Tillman. Well, now you got Peanut Tillman out. Whoever's replacing him, I think it's going to get picked on by Geno Smith. And I can't believe I'm saying that. I'm taking the Jets. We'll see you on the other side. Now into our VIP after show portion of our program, which probably won't last too long because Jason's still playing under the weather and I've been running pretty fast the last few days. I'm kind of tapped out myself. Oh, it's been crazy. I haven't stopped moving today since I got up, just nonstop stuff, getting ready for my trip. I really haven't started packing yet, but in the middle of all of that, got the Comcast guy out here to install DVR recorders and boxes and whatnot on all of the TVs. Even set up a home security system. We're under the Comcast security now. So we're all in on Comcast, I guess. Kind of like I was all in on the Giants last week. God, I hope it works out better than that. But yeah, it's been go, go, go. And now we've got our picks in on Thursday, so I can go, go, go this weekend.
Well, you know, getting the picks in early like this, that doesn't stop either one of us from calling an audible and changing any one of our picks. Although I don't think our record of changing picks is very good.
Overall, it goes against us usually.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it's always stick with your gut, you know. But to give you a little bit of an update here on this game, this Thursday night game, 1 minute left to go in the third quarter. Third quarter, 1 minute left. The Falcons have taken out Matt Ryan. All the scrubs are in now. I think it's T.J. Yates playing quarterback right now.
Wow.
And came in and promptly led a touchdown drive. It's 56-0.
Oh, my God.
56-0. They just put up this stat. 24 first downs for the Falcons. 5 for Tampa Bay.
Oof. Where'd they get 5
first downs?
That'll
take it to the end of the third quarter. 56-0.
That's unbelievable. Again, how was Tampa only a 6-point underdog?
Well, I mean, Atlanta went, I'm telling you, they were 4-12 last year. A lot of things went against them. They're not
You're doing the alien
bad.
Thing.
Bad. Oh, maybe it's the after show thing here because something's changed.
Oh, you didn't change positions or anything?
Nope. Still just sitting here.
I know. Maybe my wife waits until 10 o'clock when the live show is over, and then she can dive into all her YouTube videos or whatever. But yeah, Tampa just looking as bad as they could possibly look, looking even worse than last year, perhaps.
Yeah, and that's a team that overhauled its offense, and they're getting scooped right now. Oh, man.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed with their overhauling of the offense either. I mean, Vincent Jackson has been overrated for quite a while as far as I'm concerned. I thought that when he left San Diego, he thought he was, going to go on to greener pastures and just become a megastar at wide receiver, and he's just not that good.
Well, I want to hear where all the Bear fans are. And you know where I'm going with this, about Cade McClown. because wasn't it they should have let Cutler walk, and they were supposed to sign this guy to the big contract, and they rebuild the offense around this joker? And, yeah, they... No,
there's
they
a special
the
breed
right
of
choice.
Stupid out there that wanted that to happen. I don't think it was a lot of people, but there were a few.
There were rumblings. I mean, you and I both heard it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
it was funny.
It was maddening because just as a fan of the game, especially in you being a fan of the team, knowing that Cutler's the best they've ever had at that position in their history, and they want a journeyman quarterback because he fit the system okay, didn't make any mistakes, but wasn't going to win you any games. He wasn't going to do anything spectacular. Well, he was out before halftime tonight, in a 56-0 blowout.
There's another fallacy that I always try to call attention to when people say that Josh McCown, Jake McCown didn't make any mistakes and didn't lose them any games. If you actually watched the Bears games last year, he threw plenty of balls that should have been intercepted. He just happened to throw them to guys that couldn't catch. Now, I know just about every quarterback can say that they have mistakes that they made, that, you know, they got bailed out by one reason or another, by penalty or by the guy dropping a ball or what have you. But it seemed to happen a lot to Josh McCown. He had a lot of balls where he made the wrong read and threw it right into the belly of a linebacker or something. But because it's a linebacker, he couldn't wrap it up and put it away, and he wound up just dropping it, and it just goes as an incomplete pass. But you have to. That's why you have to watch the game. That's why I hate looking at just highlight packages or reading the box score of a game, because there's so much that happens that you have to see with your own eyes to know, you know, why things happen the way they happen. Like I said, San Francisco running the same offensive plays over and over again against the Bears, because obviously it was in the scouting report that if you run misdirections, you can get big plays on the Bears. And like I said, it did work several times, but that's all they did. Every single play was a misdirection play of some sort. And eventually, even the Bears can figure it out and catch on and put a stop to it.
Well, yeah. I mean, and if you get a chance to see it right now, when you watch this game, I know you taped it, there's not much for you to watch.
Yeah.
But I want to give you another example of how wonderful the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are. Their center went to give a shotgun snap to the quarterback and snapped the ball up his own ass. And it just fell to the turf like a turd. And then Glennon has to run up and dive on it to stop it from being a recovered fumble for Atlanta. This,
wow.
I mean, this is, yeah. You know how we cue up the Benny Hill music sometimes?
Yeah, I know.
Every time Tampa Bay is on offense tonight, that should be playing. Because it is that bad.
It's a comedy of errors.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know. I mean, is Atlanta that good, or is Tampa just that bad? And I think it's a little of, I mean, Atlanta's obviously a better team than they were last year. But Tampa, I mean, oh my God. They're just being embarrassed right now. Absolutely embarrassed in every phase. Offense, defense, special teams. They're getting the stupid penalties. You know, the we're getting blown out penalties where they're just kicking dudes and jumping on dudes and pulling dudes' helmets off. They're just playing dumb football right now.
Man, I wish I could pull out the Skype headphones and let the Yakety Sacks play, because of, you know, having a laptop that actually works, I could call it up immediately. I called it up just now and played the first, you know, stanza or whatever, but you couldn't hear it because you were just, you know, you kept talking as if you couldn't hear anything, unfortunately. So obviously you didn't hear that playing.
I know, stupid me talking on a radio show. What was I thinking?
No, I'm saying obviously you couldn't hear it. It was only me. It's blaring in my headphones perfectly, and it's just perfect sound and crisp and clear. But obviously I can't play it for everybody to hear on the show.
Well, it's like a soundtrack for yourself.
It is. I'm playing sound effects for myself, basically.
That's good.
I'm just entertaining myself. Yeah, that game sounds like it's going to be the worst game of the season.
And it's in prime time. And it's probably still getting a decent rating.
It will beat every game of the World Series in October. Whatever this rating is will be better than every game of the World Series in a month.
You know, I wanted to... I almost sent you a text today about that. My World Series teams, I've noticed, that both have the best record in each league.
Oh, there you go.
The Angels and the Nationals, both before we did our MLB preview, back in the off-season, the open mouth say shit portion of the season, I did have the Nationals and the Angels going to the World Series this year, and who knows if they'll make it, but both have the best record in their respective divisions and leagues right now. So, very happy about that. Yay me.
Yeah. Yay you. I still think that my picks can make some noise in the playoffs. I'd still, you know, when I picked the Tigers to make it out of the American League, they didn't have David Price, obviously, at that point. So obviously I feel a lot better about that now that they have David Price. And the Cardinals, I didn't know who they were going to have at the end of the year, but, you know, just being down here in Memphis watching their AAA team, you know, obviously I'm a little biased, but I get to see how much talent is on that team. That team won their, you know, AAA division title. So that's obviously a team that has a lot of guys just waiting to come up and make impact on the major leagues. And some of them did this year. Some of them weren't as good as I'd hoped they would be. But yeah, the same principle still applies. There's so many guys that can make the postseason roster that you never heard of, but they're super talented. They play the game the right way, and they can still make a lot of noise once they make it to the playoffs. And that's not going to be easy against Washington or the Dodgers or any of the other teams that are going to make it out of the National League. But I've not given up hope. I still think I have a shot with my two teams to make it. I'm as shocked as anybody that the Tigers are getting pressed like they are by the Kansas City Royals, who have to average about 0.3 runs per nine innings. That team is terrible, and yet they're somehow making a push to win the AL Central from the Detroit Tigers. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're right there.
Well, you know, in the Royals, every year after year after year, you keep hearing about how they've accumulated a lot of talent. I mean, they're always drafting high. They're putting together quietly. There's a lot of decent players, but not a lot of big name players. You'd have a hard time naming a lot of the Kansas City Royals, especially the pitching for the Kansas City Royals. But that's not a horrible team. I mean, they're doing the right things.
I don't think they're very good.
They're doing it like the Twins used to do it. They're going to make it to the playoffs and then
swept. Oh, God. Oh, the Twins used to chap my ass, you know, being a big White Sox fan, just seeing them grind and grind and grind and win the division every year. And it's like, how did they do it again? Jeez. The Royals wish they were the Twins. The Royals don't, you know, some of those Twins teams, you know, with Justin Morneau won an MVP with them and Torrey Hunter and Jock Jones. The Royals wish they had offense that good. They don't have a 3-4-5 like that right now and haven't for a long time. You know, all these guys that have come up that are supposed to be, you know, major league caliber players, potential all-stars, and have just fallen so flat. Obviously, Mike Moustakas is one of the biggest disappointments. Eric Hosmer over at first base is I don't know what happened to him, but he's really struggled all year. Their young designated hitter, Billy Butler, used to be very consistent. You could count on him for 15 homers and a 300 average, and he's fallen off this year. Seems like Alex Gordon is about the only guy that's playing pretty decent offensively for them, and yet there they are. They just keep grinding out wins and keep grinding out wins. The interesting thing about them is they've got arguably one of the most talented bullpens maybe in history, because you get a lead. If Kansas City gets a lead after six innings, the game's over. They just bring in guys, just flamethrowers, just here's some heat, here's some more heat, here's some more heat, and here's some more heat. They just bring in people to strike you out and sit you down. And I guess that must be how they're doing, because they're certainly not doing it without slugging anybody. So that was our little baseball talk. You know, we had a lot of loose ends that we haven't tied up over all the stuff that we started talking about over the off season. You got the baseball. We got, we never did an update on some more of the porn titles. I guess we can save that for maybe for next year. Some of the stupid movies on Comcast that have really bad porno titles and descriptions. There's a couple of loose ends that we never got around to, but that's definitely one of them, was the baseball.
Oh, I forgot to hit the cough button.
Yes.
I thought I hit the button there. Sorry. That's what you've been missing.
There's a lot of hacking and wheezing, huh?
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. I thought I hit the button. I must have coughed so hard I hit it again or something.
Oh.
All of a sudden I looked down to hit the button and turn it off after the cough, and I'm like, uh-oh, I'm on a live mic here.
Because you wound up to let out a big cough, as if you were trying to, like, cough over what I was saying. Like, this is garbage. Let me just cough all over this guy and just shut him
up. Oh, that's a good – oh, I'm going to have to remember that one.
When I start,
that's a good move.
When I start soliloquying and going on too long and taking up all the time.
I'll remember that for the next show if you're, you know, dragging on a pick about.
Come on, hurry it up, damn it. We're running out of time. All right, was there anything else you wanted to get to?
What I need to get to is bed.
That sounds good. All right, I am off to Chicago for a weekend. Our picks for week three are going to be up on the blog after the Atlanta game ends and I get an actual final score to put in there. And then I will be putting them up shortly. So
it's 56-7 right now.
Oh my God, they scored. All right, Tampa. Congratulations.
Vincent Jackson was given a touchdown on the one of the most blatant push-off offensive pass interference you've ever seen. I think they just kind of felt sorry for him. I mean, he literally just ran up to the dude and pushed him down to the ground and then caught the touchdown.
You're like, oh, what the hell?
Yeah, I don't think they're scoring seven more touchdowns to tie this one up in the next, you know, 8-10 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's a good bet.
I think that was a pity call. So, yeah, and I guess you'll be back next week for the recap show then.
Tentatively scheduled for Tuesday night at 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Central time. That's right, the Week 3 recap show and also picking the Thursday night matchup.
And hopefully I'll be feeling better by then.
Yes. It's been a rough week for you health-wise and for me work-wise and everything else-wise. But we made it. We battled through.
All right. We'll see you then.
All right. He's Jay. I'm Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Enjoy your football this weekend.